Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast with your host, Andrew Keel. This is the podcast where you can get the education you need to invest 100% passively in the highly profitable niche of mobile home parks.
Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Keel, and today I'm excited to welcome a friend and fellow operator, Leo Young, co-founder of Cornell Communities, on the show. Leo has been involved in over $50 million worth of real estate transactions. He is up to over 400 lots in his mobile home park portfolio. He used to serve on the acquisitions team of a $4.5 billion private equity fund. And before real estate, he was the number one regional salesperson at Tesla, an experience that helped shape him into who he is today. Leo, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on, Andrew. Excited to be here.
Yeah, to start out, would you mind sharing a little about your story and how in the world you ended up in manufactured housing communities?
Definitely. It was not a linear path, I will say that.
It never is.
I popped out and, you know, went to Brookfield or something like that and got the shoe in. But no, so I'll give the highlights basically. So growing up, I mean, I've always been interested into investments and, you know, I studied finance in college. I think I really enjoy the why behind numbers. You know, I was never a spreadsheet guy, but more so like, okay, why is this business like this? Like, why is this good? Why is this not? I ask a lot of questions. And after college, I took the leap of faith into sales. So I ended up at Tesla, as you know, because Tesla at the time was my dream company to be at. And I was like, I will sweep the floors if I have to, as long as I work there, because I was just so enamored by Elon and like what he's working on, his mission, and like going there just trained me like no other. I mean, I was there, you know, the third and most recent time they went bankrupt. So, you know, it was really intense and, you know, it gave me a lot of good work ethic and just appreciation for hard work. But, you know, during that time, I got really burnt out because, I mean, as you can imagine in sales, it's just like you're in a little hamster wheel, right? Like you're just like commission after commission, like month after month. And like running those sprints, I was just tired. And, you know, I had a sort of come to Jesus moment where, you know, a coworker, like his father suddenly died. He's riding a motorcycle, hit by a car. And I was like, oh, crap. Like, what if that happens to me? I don't know. Like anything can happen in life, right? So then I was like, okay, how do I make income that, like, you know, God forbid, like if I got hit by something really bad, I can't, you know, walk into work, like I could still receive cash and like still survive. So that led me to real estate, you know, did the deep dive into Bigger Pockets and was listening to all the podcasts and reading all the good stuff. And, you know, eventually started as a passive investor into, you know, some apartment buildings. And, you know, I got hooked from there. I mean, after the first distribution check, I was like, wow, I didn't have to do anything for this. Like, and, you know, these guys are just making money for me. It's amazing. And then, you know, learning about depreciation, like I had a mini scare there. I was like, wait, I thought this investment was making money. Like, what are you talking about? It's losing money. And then I learned about depreciation. And then after that, I was like, okay, this is the way. I'm a long-term guy. I want to just plan out my path for, you know, next 10, 20 years plus. And like, I think real estate is a good field to be in. So I got my license. I wanted to learn and earn at the same time. And I was one to not say no to opportunities to learn. So, you know, I had many different kinds of transactions from like, you know, like rentals to sales, investments, luxury housing, commercial, residential, like everything. And, you know, through that, I got recruited to a real estate fund on their acquisitions team, just helping them purchase assets nationwide. And then connected with a mutual friend who basically one day, well, we learned from each other that we're both in real estate somewhat. You know, he has a finance/private equity background, and he's like saying like, hey, here's the investment thesis. I'm at this fund. I'm learning a lot. It's great. They're investing in mobile home parks. I was like, wait, what? Mobile, what? So he sat me down. He walked me through the investment thesis. I was like, ah, that's interesting. And so now we're here, you know, like
Let's talk about that investment thesis for a minute. Like what were the things that were like, okay, this makes sense, right? Because this is This was after you had already made like some investments into apartments and you've been exposed a little bit. Tell me about that. Tell me about the investment thesis and what really stuck out to you.
I think it was twofold. It was that I can make money and I can do good. So the one side, which a lot of people hear about, is that, you know, mobile home parks, they're hard to get zoned. It's like nobody wants them. So, you know, the zoning in and of itself is valuable. And, you know, people typically, they come and their average tenancy is like 10 years plus, as opposed to like 18 months for multifamily. So that's one thing, you know, having a sticky form of cash flow with relatively low expenses. I think from an investment standpoint, non-operational operations is a whole nother story, as you know. But I think the flip side is it's actually a practical path to home ownership for a lot of people, especially in America, that real estate is such a big vehicle for wealth building for a lot of Americans. And, you know, nowadays, like housing has just gotten so unaffordable, you know, as we know, like through COVID, prices jumped up like 20-30% and just never came back down. So the opportunity is that, you know, you can actually allow people, give them a path to home ownership that maybe they wouldn't otherwise have had.
I mean, let me ask you this. Because like this is your first time you're learning about mobile home parks. You're learning the investment thesis. And I mean, it's very altruistic of you to care about the affordable housing and providing all of that. Was that really the catalyst that was like, okay, I want to invest in this, you know, or was it some of the dynamics, you know, into the assets themselves?
I would say it's probably 70-30, that 70% this is a viable investment and 30% it's actually something good. I think for me, I've always been very mission driven, hence why I joined Tesla. You know, Tesla's mission is to accelerate the world's transition to sustainable energy. So doing that and just being part of a positive force, that's always something that's near and dear to my heart. So doing good, and obviously everyone's got to make money. I mean, we're not a nonprofit. So yeah, having that dynamic certainly helps.
Cool. For me, when I learned about the shrinking supply, right, where like there's more mobile home parks being torn down than new ones being built, that was like, I was like, boom. And I don't have to own the homes, right? Because I had owned a bunch of single family homes before I got into parks. And it was like, oh, and I don't have to do repairs on, you know, appliances and fix all the things that I had to do before. I was like, okay, those two things, this is really attractive. Just personally. Yeah. I love providing affordable housing. I love the benefit of cleaning up a dirty old trailer park. Don't get me wrong, but that was my aha moment. But tell me, so you're up to 400 lots. We were just talking before we hit record. You got another 100 on the way, right? That 500 lot mark is a big number. Like it kind of, at least it was for me, it like threw off all of our systems that we had used before getting to that point because we had to like reconfigure everything. So tell me about your operation. It's you have a partner. What does your operations team look like?
Yeah, definitely. I think I definitely had that similar realization that what got us here will not get us there, that there is a lot of reconfiguring that needs to happen. So I've been just voraciously listening to podcasts, asking people like how they're setting up their ops and stuff. And I actually just got back from a conference in Nashville, IMN. I learned a ton there, you know, just talking to other people. And yeah, to answer your question on the team. So right now, we keep our team pretty small. I think it's me, a couple other partners, and then we have a few staff members under us. So basically, the way that we set up the machine is for us, we have a lot of investors into our deals, like we syndicate them. So, you know, we have a little bit of asset management fee. But like for us, we run it as at cost pretty much. So the budget doesn't go to our pockets. It goes to payroll, subscriptions, tech, you know, all that stuff. So we're just figuring out how to make everything work. So, you know, at this budget level, it's a lot of, call it more entry level people that we have to bring on. But still, there's a lot to be done when it comes to operations. So for us, we really took it to ourselves to make the most foolproof system that we can. So we really emphasize like systems, routines, having good SOPs, like recording ourselves doing something and like giving people checklists and like giving these guys KPIs. Like every week, it's like, what's your number at? You know, running like the EOS system, which a lot of people are doing. I think that's been very helpful. For me, making order from chaos, it's calming because chaos is no fun.
I agree with you there. So how many team members do you have in like the property management? Are you vertically integrated or do you use another party for that?
Yep. So some are in-house, some are third party. It's not like there's no one size fits all solution. I think it's a matter of what's our team's capacity, how far is this asset from us? So, you know, I'm based in New York and like we have some assets in New Jersey, like those are easy to do in-house. You know, I could just drive down there versus if it's in the Midwest or like in the Southeast or something, we probably need a third party with like infrastructure behind them to make sure things are done, especially like, you know, when you go down to like Midwest, Southeast, like you can get up to 100 lots, but, you know, they're paying you like $300 a month, you know, as opposed to like in New Jersey, it's like $700 and you're still the lowest in town. It's a different game. So there's no right answer. And to answer your question on staff members, I think we're at 10 right now total.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Raising capital. That's something that, you know, I think was a whole new world. It's like a whole new wing to your business. You know, when you really start doing that, what's one lesson from raising capital that you wish you knew on day one?
That's a great question. I think one lesson on capital raising I wish I knew is that it's not so much the marketing as it is the product. So in anything, there's the product and the promotion, which I think a lot of people early on, they focus on the promotion a lot and putting it out there. But, you know, I was having a lot of initial conversations like early on. And people are like, okay, what's your experience? Like, you know, how many times have you done this? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm just starting out. And like, you know, I would be honest with them. And, you know, it's fine. Like, there's still, you know, we're still having conversations like every now and then, but it's not like an immediate makes sense. So I think just to figure out what moves your needle forward the most. And to me, it's like friends and family, because like, they know me, they know my work ethic. They've heard me talk about mobile home parks at dinner parties all the freaking time. Like I can shut up about it. So, you know, they understand that asset class and they're like, yeah, what the heck? Why not? You know, I got some cash laying around. Let's do it. So I think leveraging that more and then obviously like building the resume as you go and then letting that speak for itself.
Totally. Yeah. Building that track record was the hardest because it was like, you don't have that infrastructure of, you know, investors. You're just kind of, It's friends and family. That's all you got. So those are the hardest deals. And, you know, because you don't have that track record, but then once you do build the track record, the money comes. That's like one of the easier parts if the deals are good enough. So let me ask you, Leo, what deal of yours looked amazing on paper, but became a total headache once you took it over?
Oof. So there's this one park that it looked really good on paper. I think it crunched really nicely in Excel, but it was majority park owned homes. And we obviously didn't know what we didn't know. And we're like, yeah, you know, we can just convert them to rent to owns and like, we just make some phone calls, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, the reality is that, hey, these homes need repair. And how do you manage working capital? It's not like you could just blow your load and just like repair all the homes at the same time. You have to be really strategic. You have to manage cash in, cash out. So, you know, you have to manage like 2 to 4 homes at a time, sell those, move it to the next one, you know, so forth. So that changed things a little bit. And just the sheer amount of time needed to make sure that each unit is inventoried correctly, that you know the actual condition of it, because I think a disconnect that we found was the offsite team versus the onsite team. Like we didn't know what was stopping the sale, right? You know, showings would happen, people would come and go, but like what's stopping that? Then, you know, actually going on site and like taking closer inventory and you're like, okay, well, there's a soft spot there. Okay, this needs that. Okay, I get you. That makes sense. So that was the sort of bringing order to chaos sort of moment for us.
Very cool. Yeah, no, the park owned homes are tough and we've had similar issues where we took over a whole park that was all park owned and it's hard to like estimate, you know, the vacancy that you're going to have on those and pro forma for it because every market's a little different. Would you mind just telling us like, how are you finding your new deals and, you know, what's your criteria and how has that evolved?
Yeah, I think the simple and transparent answer is that for us as a company, it's a step of the journey. It's not like we have everything figured out. So what is happening today may not happen tomorrow. I think right now we do a mixture of, you know, broker and wholesaler deals versus direct outreach deals while we sort of build that up. And there is no right or wrong way because there's pros and cons, right? You know, if you reach out directly to a mom and pop owner, that's like, you know, ideally, you know, like they haven't heard of, you know, the valuations and stuff like that. Maybe you can get it for cheaper, but maybe they don't have as good of a record. Maybe you'll find some things during diligence that they weren't forthright with, you know, versus like a deal coming from a broker. Yeah, it's like closer to market value, so to speak, but you know, they've done their diligence because they want to get paid, right? They don't want buyers backing out. So they'll ask those questions up ahead and prepare a nice little package for you. So I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. What's the most expensive operator mistake that you've come across that we can learn from?
I think, you know, that I mentioned that earlier, it's the park-owned homes. I think we didn't properly budget enough working capital for it. You know, we just didn't really assume that these homes would need that much work because some of them, you know, they have boilers that need to be replaced or like, you know, roofing's all shot or like the flooring and like, these are not cheap items. And I think that, and also QCing your contractors because a lot of them, I mean, look, they're eager to get the capital or like they're eager to get paid, but then like whether or not they do a good work, it's kind of up to you.
Yeah.
So you need to have good processes like, okay, take photos, but then also ideally, you know, have your on-site manager or something, go FaceTime you, go like take a video and like actually show me what's going on. Because I mean, a photo will not show you a soft spot versus like a manager walking through, oh, well, yep, that's a soft spot right there. You know, then you know what's going on. And I think budgeting is super important. I think for mobile home parks, I mean, they have like such a low default rate, you know, on paper. But I think one of the reasons that people sort of, you know, blow up their business plan and need to sell distress is that they don't have enough working capital set aside. They run out of money and they're like, well, crap, like how do I pay my vendors? How do I pay taxes in like fire sale?
Yeah. And I think also like having reserves, right? Because stuff's going to come up, right? Because you would think that a home that's occupied when you closed on the property, that's a park-owned home that maybe goes vacant a couple months after you own it, you would think, okay, it can't be that bad, right? Because there was people living in this home. But that's the furthest thing from the truth, you know.
Yeah.
Some people live in you know,
they live in squalor.
They live in a mess.
So surprising.
Exactly, which is very surprising. So you need to have those reserve funds to be able to come in and rehab those. And I think that's a good point. Is like, don't expect to just use cash flow, right? Because you're only going to be able to go so far, and it'll slow the whole project down. That's good. That's really good advice. I mean,
the rule of thumb is like, 50%, you know, of the rental you set aside for repairs, like sometimes that's not enough. And like, sometimes you turn a unit and you're like, oh crap. Like they didn't tell me about all this. So
totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
What does the perfect mobile home park look like in your eyes and why?
Something owned by Sun Communities at a good price. I mean, I'm
ready to pay a four cap.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how they do it, but I think a perfect one is, I mean, aside from all the obvious points that people will say, you know, city utilities, like nice enough scale to support a staff and resources and whatnot. But I think what's important is that you have good people inside because people don't talk about, operators don't talk about this a lot, is that a few bad apples can really spoil the bunch. When you have some people that are not doing good things, like drug dealers, that will change the vibe of your park really quickly. You'll have people moving out. They're not going to tell you why. And, you know, lo and behold, like three people moved out last month or something. So I think training the people. So one intangible that we sort of budget for is a fun budget. You know, it's sort of like community like enhancement. Like we'll give a park manager like a few hundred bucks, like, you know, just do something that brings people together that, you know, makes them feel good and feel proud of living where they are. I think that's super important. And then you can sort of weed out the people and like the residents, they talk to each other and they'll compare notes. They're like, oh yeah, that guy, he's up to no good. And, you know, these little things will actually come out. So it's an interesting learning that, you know, it's actually good ROI, but it doesn't make sense on paper.
And one thing you said early on there was that, you know, a few bad apples can spoil the bunch. And that's with your tenant base, but also with your on-site managers. That's one thing that we found is a good on-site manager literally is worth their weight in gold, because everything will run seamlessly. They're going to be firm, but not a jerk, right, when addressing and communicating with the residents. But a bad on-site manager, it's just like they just tell you what you want to hear. And then when you, you know, get the walkthrough video of the park, they're leaving part of the park, you know, out of the video, and they're not showing you things. And it's just, that's where getting on site is just so valuable, because you're really going to be able to see through things. But I thought that was a good comment that, you know, you really have to stay on these things from a management standpoint and weed those, like you're saying, weed the bad apples out, so that, you know, you're going to attract a good bunch that's going to stay there a long time and not have that constant churn, which is really like the spiral of death, right? In a mobile home park. It's like, if people keep moving out and you don't know why, it's likely your manager is doing something weird and like causing problems, and you need to get on site as soon as possible, because again, that's just CapEx money that you're going to have to reinvest to get those homes back online. And it's very expensive, and, you know, you might be getting rid of good tenants just because something's going wrong.
I will add, now that you mentioned that being on site at properties, it's absolutely imperative. I will say, I think a lot of people, they like to just manage things offsite with Excel and their dashboards and stuff, but nothing can replace going on site. So
I know you're on site right now, right? In Barton County, exactly. Kansas.
Yeah.
Before we hit record, Leo was telling me how he's out in Kansas. He's in a motel room looking at one of his parks. And I applaud you for that, dude, because that's, you know, you got to get boots on the ground. You'll learn a lot fast.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think you have to definitely set aside that budget. And for those that are investing out of state, then, you know, you have to budget for that. It's not that you can't manage a property out of state. It's just like, budget a little bit more. I think, you know, once or twice a year, if you're able to go on site, that would be good. Because I think the important thing is that, you know, your on-site manager, yes, they're worth their weight in gold, but not everyone, like there's problems that they can't solve due to their skill, or like they don't know how to process it. And like just walking through the property with them and like seeing what's going on, talking to the residents, like that will show you things that you need to do for like the next, you know, 6 months to a year.
Totally. Let's talk about rent control. You know, how do you think that increasing regulations will impact the mobile home park sector over the next 5 to 10 years?
That's a great question. I think, so I will say that I know nothing, right? And nobody could predict the future with their crystal ball. Sure. But I think just educated, you know, philosophers' opinion is, I think it's going to make the market more inefficient, because generally regulation just stymies the efficient flow of the economy. I mean, if you think of the economy as like, I mean, it's a construct. It's a group of people, and it's how they spend their money. So if you sort of block it, then it's going to flow a certain way that causes other issues, right? I mean, if you think of it like a water leak, you know, if you plug the hole here, it's just going to come out there. So there's definitely going to be unintended consequences. I think, you know, I guess the sad part is that, you know, a lot of the people who pass these rules, like, they have the best intentions at heart. That, you know, they see these hardworking people. They're like, oh, I can't afford it. Okay, fine, like, let's do this. But, you know, what does that expose? Maybe then the property owner doesn't have enough money to put the proper money back into the property, right? And you know, a lot of these, we'll see, you know, these apartment buildings, right? Like the Class C apartment buildings, like they've gone like really downhill sometimes. And it's just like the owners don't have money for big CapEx items, like roof replacements, like for an apartment building, it's like $400K or something. You know, so, you know, maybe for a mobile home park, it's like, maybe they didn't set aside enough money to replace, you know, failing septic systems or, you know, a treatment plant, God forbid, right? So I think that's just going to make it more and more inefficient. But who knows? I mean, maybe that was the plan all along, you know, get these parks shut down, redeveloped into multifamily or something that gives the city more tax revenue. But who knows, right? I think we could all just hypothesize.
Yeah, totally. Leo, looking back at your career so far, what's one deal that stands out as like a home run, you know, and what made it so successful? If you had to just talk about one.
I wouldn't say it's a deal in the sense of a property, but I think it's a deal that I made with myself. that I will do whatever it takes to succeed in this industry. I think when I went into it, you know, like the initial years, like the way that you learn an industry, like usually you start from listening from others, like podcast, books, whatever. And then you see, you know, the rubber meets the pavement, like, okay, this is what you're up against. And initially, like, I didn't really like operations. I was like, man, like these tenants are calling me, asking me how to pay rent. I'm like, I already sent them a video how to do that. Like, why are they like wasting my time doing this? But then I think I realized that, hey, like I am the end all be all. Like the buck stops with me, right? Investors are trusting me to me and my team to do whatever is necessary to make the property running well. And also that the tenants sort of trust us to give them a good, clean place to live in. So I think just stepping up and, you know, not being afraid to get your hands dirty. I think that's a big revelation for me. And I think that's the best decision that I've made mentally, at least.
I love it. Burn the boats. Yeah, that's great, man. If you were a passive investor and you had, you know, some capital to allocate in the space into mobile home park and investments, you know, what are some pieces of advice, you know, you would give yourself, you know, before you deployed that capital?
Yeah, I would say the jockey is almost as important as the horse. I think a lot of people, they look at spreadsheets and pitch decks, they see a nice sexy number, they're like, oh yes, let's do it. And then they forget, they don't ask the extra questions, they don't vet out the sponsors. And, you know, lo and behold, like maybe they don't have the tenacity to handle something. I mean, like anyone can have a nice resume, but you know, when crap hits the fan, it's like, what are you going to do? You know, there's people that in general, it's like more educated people. They're like, oh, you know, like we didn't foresee this happening, blah, blah, blah. And like, that's why we're stopping your distributions, like versus like, you know, a guy who's a little bit more, you know, just like, screw it. Like I'm going to step up and like, I'm going to make it happen. Like I'm going to lend the deal my own money. I'm going to keep it afloat and do whatever it takes. And I think having that person on your team, that's like infinitely valuable, because like, look, no property is always going to turn out the way that you think it will. But you know, what you can do as a passive investor, I mean, you're essentially ceding control to the property to someone. So you want to make sure that they can actually take care of it. So that's, I would say like probably 60-40 split. I mean, the property's got to be good. You know, you do all your checks, but also like, bet out the sponsor. One last thing on the sponsor is that for me, I almost always make it a note to try to speak to the people making the decisions. I don't want to talk to some investor relations guy, because they're just going to tell you what you want to hear, as opposed to the actual sponsor itself. You get to see like how they think through problems and like what they're actually like. So that's two important things.
Well, that's good advice. All right. So I have this little lightning round that I put together, and ChatGPT helped me with some cool, spicy questions to ask you here. So just shoot out. We're going to go quick. Shoot out the first thing that comes to your head. All right.
Okay.
All right. If you could own every mobile home park in one state, which would it be? You're hesitating.
I know you said quick. New Jersey.
New Jersey. Wow. Okay. I didn't see that coming. One state or market you avoid. You wouldn't own in
Illinois.
Okay. The number of lots in your most recent mobile home park acquisition.
Soon to be 100.
Okay. But before that.
105.
Nice. Do you own any parks with wastewater treatment plants or lagoons?
No, not yet. But I'm learning that it's not as bad as people make it out to be. Just got to go in with the right budget.
Yeah. And just understand it and be okay kind of learning all about them. Yeah, that's good. What's the first image that comes to mind when you hear trailer park or mobile home park or manufactured housing community?
So three different words. Trailer park, it's trailer park boys. It's just a stereotype. Mobile home park, I would say Frank Rolfe. And then manufactured housing community, I think all the institutions like Berkadia, Sun, Brookfield, these guys. Mm.
Yeah, no, that's good. Last one, what would you be doing if you didn't get into mobile home parks?
Investing somehow. I always love investing. I think I just love to make predictions on the future and place strategic bets on it. So one way or the other, maybe it's stocks or real estate or something else.
Cool. Anything else you think you that a passive investor should know before we sign off here?
Yeah, I would say definitely try to get some face time with a sponsor that you're working with. Try to just understand them over time. It's not a rush. I mean, you work hard for your money and we obviously work hard for your money too, but you know, just get to know the team. Don't rush into something. And also have the right frame of mind. It's that if there's no risk, there's no reward, right? Mm. I mean, look, if you keep your money in your bank, that's like 1% versus like, okay, like this stuff definitely has risk. So like learn it, be okay with it and just invest accordingly. Not financial advice.
Yes, no. Leo, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate it very much.
How can our listeners connect with you if they're interested in learning more about what you're doing at Cornell Communities?
Yeah. So you can either reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn or social media. It's Leo Young, LEOYOUNG. Or you can go to our website, cornell-communities.com. And I'm pretty easy to find. I'm the only Leo Young, especially in mobile home parks.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks again. That's it for today, folks. If you got value out of this episode, please consider leaving us a review. It really does help us get more listeners that can find the show. But thank you all so much for tuning in.
Would you like to see mobile home park value add projects in progress? If so, follow us on Instagram at @passivemhpinvesting for photos and awesome videos from our recent mobile home park acquisitions. Once again, that's @passivemhpinvesting on Instagram. See you there.